And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Here at Quark's, customer satisfaction is our primary concern.
I'd say we just found our way into a wormhole.
I'm Kira Nerys.
Lieutenant Commander Worf, reporting for duty, sir.
You're the best crew any captain ever had. This may be the last time we're all together.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
It is quite simply, Commander. The journey you have always been destined to take.
Sensors are not functioning.
We've lost all contact with the space station.
What the hell is happening out there?
Shields up. Damage report.
Battle stations.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Listen to the prophets. A Deep Space Nine Two True Freaks presentation with Sean Engel and Andrew Layla.
And now with 100% more Paul Spataro.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, a Two True Freaks presentation. This episode is dedicated to my lovely wife, Angela, who has let me record this on the day of our 17th wedding anniversary. Thanks, love. Love you lots. I am Andrew Leyland.
I'm Paul Spataro.
I'm Sean Engel.
And that's
all
the three of them.
Like, Angela.
Yeah, well, she has moments. I hope you don't love her.
Well, we don't love her, but we do love her. It's really nice of her allowing you to come and record with us and talk about goofy Star Trek stuff on a day that you should be dedicating to her.
So, oh, I will be later on. Don't you worry.
I also want to. Unfortunately, I'm not going to let Angela have the spotlight alone because I'm gonna force in a second person to dedicate this to because we're remiss in not mentioning the fact that Tim Elliott made a donation to Two True Freaks to be split among several shows, and this is one of them. So thank you, Tim, for your generous donation.
Thank you very much, Tim. We've let them put it back into the running costs of the network.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the decision, wasn't it?
Yeah, we all decided it's probably best, rather than splitting it up for the individual shows, just to put it back in the bank and, you know, help to pay off, you know, cost for hosting the website and all of that. So
no, yeah, I wanted money.
Well, that's you, isn't it? But thank you very much, Tim. We did appreciate it.
Yes.
We are the Charlie's Angels of podcasting. Very much appreciated your donation.
With Charlie's Angels now?
Yes. Demands those angels.
Boy, that is this. We are not pulling in the ratings the way Jacqueline Smith Kate did, whatever her name was, and Farrah Fawcett did.
Kate Jackson, Mrs.
Kate
King,
Jackson.
As in the Scarecrow and.
Ah, Mrs. King.
Mm. Anyway, we're not a Scarecrow and Mrs. King podcast.
Perhaps see, after we finish Game of Thrones.
See, and well, I got...
Yes!
There you go. God, we've got our lives, you know, mapped out for the next 20 years, for the love of God.
You're the Bruce Boxleitner podcast at Two True Freaks presentation.
Oh, I'm certain Scott will be happy to hear that we're going to be talking about
I think he would be on board with that, because I know he doesn't listen to this drivel.
So, you know, we might as well put
where
it
do
out.
We go from the...
Do we have
more
any
drivel?
Do we have any Bruce Boxleitner news to talk
about?
Do we
about? Have any Bruce Boxleitner news?
I've scored my tickets to the 2015 Bruce Boxleitner Con.
Was there a run on those?
Well, I just wanted to make sure that I was able to get in the doors, you know, because it goes fast.
Yeah, well...
I'm absolutely sure he's a very, very lovely man. I'm pretty sure Scott's not sure of that, but...
Oh, Scott's not listening to this show. You know that.
You think Bruce Boxleitner is?
Yes.
Like, dude, what else has he got to do?
He's like, I have to know what made Star Trek Deep Space Nine so much better than Babylon 5. I've got to find out.
Professor Allen's going to email in now.
Professor Allen. Well, I'm going to say Professor Allen doesn't listen to this show and hopes that he does email in. Ah, see?
Oh, I see what you did there. Very clever. If we mention everybody in the known world, do you think some of them will listen?
Sure, why not?
If William Shatner listens, please email in. Mm-hmm.
If William Shatner listens, he should live tweet.
Oh, I wouldn't mind Shatner live tweeting our show.
Because you know, apparently that's what he does with everything he watches.
Hmm. See, I am... Like I said, it took me like years to get on Facebook. I'm still not on Twitter, and I don't think I ever will be. I think Twitter, you know, this is just my thought. I think Twitter will be well and gone before I'm ever interested in getting onto it, and there'll be some new form of communication that'll allow us to annoy each other in some random way.
I'm on Twitter, Leyland_Andrew, if you want to say hi.
There you go.
I'm on Twitter also, but probably not worth your while to say hi because I very, very rarely even look at it. I'm on it because my children are on and I want to be able to monitor what they do. And no other reason.
That's fair enough.
Now, I'm only on Facebook because Demonza required me to, so there you go.
It was in the contract that you signed in blood.
Exactly. I had to come on Facebook and I had to post my shows up there, so otherwise, you know, otherwise I don't get my monthly stipend. Nothing. So, since we don't have any Bruce Boxleitner news or any Star Trek news, do we want to go ahead and just...
Or any Babylon 5 news.
Any Babylon 5 news, any Earth, you know, Final Contact or kind of Final Conflict news, you know, no Andromeda news. I can
Well, there are those who would say it's a crossover because I often Babylon.
Oh, I see what you did there.
See, that's when you put in the closing music to Police Squad, freeze frame it, and we're out of here.
Special guest star, Bruce Boxleitner.
All right, so we're getting into our episode now?
Let's do it.
Desperate outcast plots the ultimate theft.
Either you help me, or you and your friends will die.
The life force within Dax.
He's come to steal my symbiote.
Now to save her shipmates.
I don't want anyone else hurt because of me.
Will she make the ultimate sacrifice?
Forgive me. Put the symbiote back where it belongs.
I can't do that.
This woman is dying and I need your help to save her.
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Right, we are on episode number 24 of Star Trek Deep Space Nine, Invasive Procedures, directed by Les Landau, because it is the will of Landau. The teleplay is by John Welpley and Robert Hewlett Wolf.
Did he not command Moonbase Alpha?
I don't recall the name of... I did not see a lot of Space 1999, so I can't answer your question.
That's it. Martin Landau.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about a character name there.
That joke fell flat on its face. Free to cut it out.
I was thinking the will of Landrew.
Nope, that's staying in.
I thought we were doing Deep Space 1999. Is that not still covering?
Oh, the space station flies off from the moon and...
and everyone whispers.
Okay, so back to Invasive Procedures. The show guest starred John Glover as Varad, Megan Gallagher as Mareel, Tim Russ as T'Kha, and Stephen Rankin as Yeto. At a time when Deep Space Nine is all but empty, an unjoined Trill and his crew, a pair of hired Klingon mercenaries and a former prostitute named Mareel, overpower the crew of the station. The Trill, Varad, applied to be joined and was rejected. Now he wants the Dax symbiote. After restraining shapeshifting Constable Odo in a container and taking the rest of the crew hostage, he forces Dr. Bashir to transfer the symbiote into his body. Without her symbiote, Jadzia will die within hours. Bashir has one of the Klingons assist him as he tries to save Jadzia's life. Meanwhile, Commander Sisko deals with Varad, who now has the memories of all the Dax hosts, including Curzon Dax, who was a very close friend and mentor to Sisko. He implores the Trill to set things right, but he sees that Varad intends to let Jadzia die. Meanwhile, Mareel, who Varad had befriended early in life, begins to realize how much the man has changed since he received the symbiote, and begins to think the joining may have been a bad idea. However, she remains loyal to him. Quark, who is responsible for Varad and his crew boarding the station, pretends to be injured, and thereby provides Bashir with the opportunity to sedate one of the Klingons. He then cracks the lock on the container holding Odo. Once Varad realizes what has happened, he heads for his ship, taking Kira as a hostage. By the time Varad reaches his ship, Odo has released the docking clamps, leaving him stranded. Major Kira overpowers the Klingon who is holding her, but in the confusion, Varad slips away, heading for another runabout. In the meantime, Ariel has realized that the man she loves is truly gone, and decides to help Sisko. Sisko confronts Varad in the airlock to the runabout. Believing that Sisko will not shoot his old friend and risk damaging the recently joined symbiote, Varad begins to walk away, but Sisko shoots him, declaring, "Don't call me Benjamin." The Dax symbiote is returned to Jadzia, leaving Varad alone with himself once again. The end. Cue the slow, sad Hulk walking away movie music. I thought, just to give the quick thing, to quote my friend Andy, it's all right. only with a slightly different inflection. I didn't think it was a terrible episode. I thought it had some things about it that were mildly entertaining, but on a whole, it's a failure. I didn't think it was very well done. I didn't think it was all that suspenseful. I didn't think that the turnaround on the people was believable. What'd you guys think?
I thought essentially, I'm going to have to agree with you. Like the first season episode, Dax, I was kind of down on this. I thought Terry Farrell was wasted, especially, well, not wasted as in, like, she got baked and come on the screen, you know, completely high, but her talent was wasted. She turned in such a great performance in the last episode, the Siege, and here she's just kind of, oh, I feel so empty, and please don't hurt them, and all that, you know, just her character was woefully misused. There were some great character performances by John Glover. I liked him. Essentially, this episode was kind of addressing the idea of entitlement, which I think around the time this came out in 1993, so we're past the Clinton era. So we're after that whole, you know, we're in that whole, you know, I feel your pain, you know, it takes a village type era. So there's this idea that everyone is entitled to their to get these things, and you know, they kind of address this in the show of the Trills, you know, having the Trill joined to you is a special thing, and you have to work for it, and not everyone gets it done. And the character, you know, John Glover's character essentially felt that he was entitled to have this, and he was going to do whatever he can to make sure that he did it. And it just wasn't a great episode.
I completely disagree with both of you.
Okay, go right ahead.
I actually thought this was a really interesting episode about entitlement versus earning something. I thought that John Glover was absolutely fantastic in that Christopher Reeve Clark Kent Superman way. He's very meek and mild and mannered, and when he gets the Dax symbiote, his performance completely changes. But it should be, you know, no surprise that John Glover's a brilliant actor. I thought Sisko was absolutely fantastic in this one. Avery Brooks delivering a magnificent performance, from his boiling anger that these people have come in and taken over the station, to his losing it when he kicks the shit out of that Klingon. Absolutely, he is physically the most imposing of the Star Trek captains. I include Shatner in that, because Shatner did a lot of very TV posed fighting. Sisko boxes this guy to the ground. He's not a guy you want to get into a fist fight with. I think that his performance, again, when Glover first takes control of the Dax symbiote and they're having that reminiscent moment, and then he just turns it around at the end and says, "You're not the Dax I know. Don't call me Benjamin." Absolutely fantastic character stuff. My only issue with it, there's some wonderful euphemisms for the fact that Megan Gallagher's character was a prostitute. Mm-hmm. And there is no way in hell I buy that a prostitute can kick the shit out of Kira Nerys. I didn't buy that at all. But in every other respect, even Bashir is good in this one. Now, the only other problem I have with it is Quark. This is all Quark's fault, and he doesn't get any reprisals for it, apart from Kira saying, "I'm not going to trust you again," and she doesn't. As the series goes forward, Kira never likes Quark or gets on with him. But other than that, I actually thought this one really delivered for a quiet space ship-bound show. Space station-bound, so sorry. My other issue with it, the station got evacuated last episode. It's evacuated again this episode. Why could they not have just made it part of the same evacuation? And have it follow on from the events of last week?
Because they wrote this episode not knowing about the other episode.
That's the real world reason. But, you know, a couple of changed lines of dialogue and you could probably have fixed it.
Well, in the last episode, they also had to have the reunion of
suppose you had to wrap up last week's episode as a wrap-up, didn't you? It just felt very odd to have the story beats repeated. The station was evacuated again. Quark didn't get off again because he was carrying Gold Press Latinum with him. It just felt very odd to have these two episodes back-to-back like that.
Well, this time it was evacuated because of that green slime from the issue number one of the comic book.
Don't remind us. To be honest, I was actually kind of impressed with the special effects shot outside the station. Supposedly that was done, filmed in like high motion camera with them blowing liquid nitrogen around the station. And the special effects really looked good. It was a unique sort of effect shot to get this sort of wispy clouds coming around the station. So I like that. I agree with you, Andy. The character moments in this show were good, especially between Glover and Sisko, Avery Brooks. But overall, the episode just didn't work for me. I thought, you know, there are some lackluster performances, you know, especially Quark and, you know, Jadzia again. Her performance on the last show was superlative, and this one she was just kind of whiny and, you know, passive. And but to each their own. To each their
own. I'm very hit and miss on John Glover. I love him as Lionel Luthor, but there have been other performances where, I don't know, there's something about him that just kind of grates on me a little bit occasionally. And he seemed to hit both of those in this episode. When he's the confident Dax symbiote Varad, I liked his performance there, and I agree with you, the scenes with Avery Brooks were tremendous as far as that goes. But when he was the meek Varad, I thought he was a little too over the top on it. I thought he, you know, the transformation was too stark. So I liked and disliked John Glover in this episode. Although I do agree with you, Andy, that Sisko was great in it. But then, you know, he usually is.
I think he's especially great. I don't understand how people can watch this and label him the weak commander.
Oh, no, not at all.
He's absolutely fantastic in this one. He's kind of channeling Edward Woodward in that he does that internal boiled rage so fantastically well. But in this one, he just lets it out and he pounds the shit out of that Klingon guy.
Well, and
he doesn't stand a chance.
He's not only punching him, but he's you know, physically getting angry. You can see in his face that he is yelling and screaming and ready to take this guy down. So, yeah, Avery Brooks' performance in this is great. A lot of the others just don't do it for me. I think one of the other things is the surgery scene. My God, the it was like, do any of you remember the Steve Austin $6 million man action figure with the roll up skin for the bionic arm?
Who is your audience, Sean? Of course we remember that.
That's essentially what the surgery was. It looked like just a piece of plastic put over their abdomen and the little trill thing. I'm so glad that the trill essentially is USB compatible. You just take it out and then you just shove it in and it hooks up USB to the other trill. It works fine.
It's a good job the other trill's not an Apple.
Yes, thank God. Or, you know, if it was USB 3.0, it'd be bad. It'd be horrible.
You like to think that once the symbiote joins, that there's actual, you know, an actual physical joining. It's not just sitting there in its stomach. You know, that there's actual going to be some synapses or veins or something that are going to start to connect. And you know, yeah, when the host dies, that those things have to be disconnected. And it should be traumatic for the symbiote, not just for the host.
Yeah, but they don't play that up because, you know, Bashir is such a fantastic doctor. He can save them, you know, regardless. Even though Dax is supposed to die, he's able to keep her alive. But you've got to kind of wonder, now that Varad has had the Dax host taken out of him, is he going to die now? Had they sentenced him to death because they removed the symbiont from him?
I don't know.
Or does
like,
it have
I don't
to be
maybe
linked
because,
for a certain time?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Maybe because his body didn't have time enough to totally adjust to it, you know, it would save him. I'm not sure.
I guess that's a way to no prize it, but still, it's
yeah. They don't explain that in the show.
Mm-hmm. They just kind of end it with, you know, Julian Glover looking sort of listful off to the side, like he was baked. So who knows?
Best line of the show, delivered by Quark talking about Rom. He couldn't find couldn't find a cup of water if you dropped him in a lake. But even if he is an idiot, he's still my brother.
Yeah, that was fantastic. Quark was good in this one, apart from it all being his fault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's the other thing I kind of agree with too. There's no repercussions for it, and this is really over the top. This isn't just selling somebody out for financial gain. This is sentencing Jadzia to death.
Yeah,
but for financial gain. I think this one is, there should be repercussions for this, or they should have come up with a different way for these characters to have gotten onto the ship, because, you know, it's far too mercenary. He's not supposed to be willing to go that far. He's supposed to be the you know, the Ferengi with the deeply, deeply, deeply hidden heart of gold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. For a show as good as this one at following up cause and effect, the fact that Quark just gets away with this with no mention of it, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, it was nice to see Tim Russ, you know, and he's basically played a Federation member in Generations. He was he was like one of the helmsmen on the Enterprise B. Then he
was a terrorist in Deep Space Nine, mm-hmm. in Next Generation, sorry.
Okay, and then was he a different alien race, or was he human?
I don't remember. He's in the episode where they do Die Hard. The ship gets taken over, and Picard has to crawl through. He has to crawl through the duct saying, "Come out to the universe, have a few laughs." But I don't remember much about the episode, other than Data's very funny in it.
And then, of course, you know, he played Tuvok in Voyager and Klingon in this. I think he's
and also in the Undiscovered Country. Does he not? Is he not on the?
No, he isn't. He's in the Voyager episode that goes back to that, but he's not actually in Undiscovered Country. He is not on the Voyager Generation.
See the Voyager episode. Trip
no, here. I don't think he's in. I don't think he was on the Bridge of the Excelsior with Sulu in Star Trek VI. I think it was just that episode of Voyager. You're right. Okay. But yeah, he's done a lot of, you know, it's surprising. He's done a lot of acting on all the shows, and you know, I enjoyed him as a Klingon. I thought he portrayed a Klingon very well. But you know, unfortunately, the little character moments are really, for me, the only thing that sort of shine in this episode.
I wouldn't have known it was Tim Russ if I hadn't seen it in the credits, and I think that's a testament to him as an actor.
Mm-hmm. You could kind of tell, but I think it is sort of you seeing his name in the credits that kind of says, oh, I need to be looking for Tim Russ, and then you can kind of hear his voice, but, you know, he portrays Tuvok as vastly different than what he does of this Klingon character. I mean, you can see more of a relationship from his character in Generations and Tuvok than you can from his character in Voyager in this show.
Yeah.
That's
it for invasive procedures.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you, I don't have a lot of notes on this because I didn't think there was that much to talk about. I just didn't think it was that good of an episode. Yeah. It didn't get my mind going. But I think we could talk a little bit more about the earning something versus entitled, you know, that you guys brought up. And that is the only real subtext in this episode that has any lasting value as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I do think, unlike what people perceive in real society often, I think John Glover had, or his character, had done enough to at least feel or to make an argument that he had earned this. Now, one might disagree, certainly, but it's not just the, you know, I don't want to get into real world politics on people's sense of entitlement, only because I don't want to make this a political a political rant. But like I said, one might disagree, and certainly I would, that he has earned the right to forcibly take this symbiote. But at least they gave his character enough depth to have him have, you know, had a history that in his own deranged mind justified the actions he was taking. You know, it kept him from being just a total bad guy.
Yeah, well,
there was a little thought of sympathy for him that somehow society had left him out and passed him by. And I at least liked that aspect of the show. And again, I disagree with his sense of entitlement, but I think it was presented in an intelligent way, and I like that.
I disagree with it as well, but at least he had some sort of basis for his entitlement, that he worked for this. He studied to try to become a host. You know, he put in his... You know, he put in his due diligence to try and get this to happen to him, but still it didn't happen. And that's sometimes the breaks. Sometimes people will study their hardest, get really good test scores on their test, and not get accepted to whatever college, you know, whatever, you know, won't get that job opportunity, and someone else will. And it's wrong to think that simply because I did A, B, and C, which are required for me to get this, that I should get it. Sometimes there are more qualified people, and obviously the people in Trill Society who pick people who are going to be joined have a certain sort of criteria that he just didn't fit into. And that's something that he should have to deal with. You know, mm-hmm. Not everyone gets what they want, and that entitlement idea is just something that I'm not a fan of.
Oh yeah, I totally agree with you. Like I said, I'm not justifying his actions, but what I'm saying is that at least they gave his character enough depth and realism to have a deranged reason to think that he's entitled.
Yes.
Oh yeah, see, I think Glover's character was well done and well written, and his relationship with Sisko was what saved the episode from being a bit dull.
Yeah, but you like this episode, so your opinion is nullified.
Didn't we have a conversation at the beginning of this that we weren't going to dismiss other people's opinions?
That's very true, as long as they agree with mine.
All right, well, there we go.
Now, of course, obviously, you know, you liked it more than me, that's fine. I have no issue with that whatsoever. In fact, I don't... Other than our mileage varied, I don't think you said anything that I totally disagree with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's an episode that either plays very well as a bottle show, or it doesn't. That's the problem with bottle shows, when they're all stuck on the Enterprise or they're all stuck on the station. It's whether or not that episode speaks to you. And for a very quiet episode with nothing going on in it, I thought this one was very entertaining. I wasn't bored by it, which goes back to what we've discussed before. If it's boring, I'll dismiss it. But if it's at least entertaining to me, or trying to do something, or trying to say something, or there's a good performance or a good character bit, then, you know, it's still engaging me. And for 46 minutes, this engaged me.
And I have a little connection for us on this one. Megan Gallagher, who appeared on this episode, in real life is the sister-in-law of Catherine Hicks, Dr. Gillian Taylor of The Voyage Home.
Huh?
Right.
See, I was going to say that she was also, Frank Black's wife, not Frank Black the singer, but Frank Black as in the character from Millennium. She was Lance Hendrickson's wife on Millennium. Plus, she was also Gary Shandling's wife on The Gary Shandling Show. So if there's an opportunity for me to slip in the Gary Shandling theme song in here, I will probably put that in there.
This is the theme to Gary Show.
The opening theme to Gary Show.
This is the music that you hear when you watch the credits. Mm-hmm. That one,
exactly.
I think Kurt Millennium would have been much more interesting if the lead singer of the Pixies was in it.
Unfortunately...
Obviously only me thinks that.
Unfortunately, I could not tell you who the lead singer of the Pixies was.
I couldn't Frank tell you Black. Who the Pixies are.
Oh, well, then, no, I know who the Pixies are, but I didn't know that Frank Black was the lead. I knew Frank Black was a singer, but I didn't know lead singer of the Pixies.
As far as I know, Pixies hang out with Tinkerbell.
Oh, dear. You two need to read some more Scott Pilgrim.
Sadly, we probably do. All right, well,
it sounded like we've run out of things to talk about.
I think we have.
All right, so I guess we're going to give our rankings on this one.
Yep.
I'm not sure where I'm going to rank in relation to you, Sean, but I'm very confident that I will rank lower than Andy.
Yep.
I thought this was a below-average episode overall. I didn't think it was horrible. I thought it was watchable. It was entertaining on a level of just sitting and watching it almost mindlessly, as far as I was concerned. So, to me, it's a 2.5.
Okay, I will go next, and I'm going to have to agree with Paul. I was almost thinking about giving it a 2, but I think the performances by Sisko and John Glover, despite the fact that his turn did feel a bit over the top, I thought the performances by all the characters in here did help it. I just really didn't think it was that entertaining a show. It fell into the sort of characterization that they had with the original episode, the first season episode, Dax, where, in my opinion, they sort of squandered the idea of taking the Trill characters and developing them. I like the entitlement thing of it, but again, I'm just going to have to go, it wasn't one of my favorite ones, and give it a 2.5.
I thought it was solidly entertaining for a bottle show. I think all the characters got something to do. I didn't buy Kira being beaten down so easily. But other than that, I think it's a great showcase for how brilliant Avery Brooks is as an actor and how fantastic Sisko can be as a character and as a captain. And I enjoy John Glover in anything, whether he's voicing the Riddler or whether he's Donald Trump in Gremlins 2 or whatever his name was in that film. It wasn't Donald Trump, I'm pretty sure. He's brilliantly entertaining. So I'm going to give it 3.
Oh, you weren't that vastly different from us.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. 5. No, don't get me wrong. It's not a great episode, but it's not awful, and I wasn't bored by it. It entertained me for the 46 minutes.
There you go. Unfortunately, I think since this was a bottle show and very limited cast, I didn't see Morn anywhere. I don't think there was even a chance for anyone to see Morn. So
the station was abandoned, so I don't think Morn was even in the episode.
Yeah. Well, that's disappointing. Half the episode
and
so far.
And that is why the episode drops.
Oh, there you go. I got it. Now I got to revise it. It's a 2. No. No more and drops at a half point.
Drops the episode. No, that's fair enough. I can agree with that.
We're going to just have to hope for more next time.
We hope for Morn.
More Morn. Bring us Morn. All right, I guess we can, before I come up with some other stupid thing to say about Morn, let's move on to email.
Incoming transmission.
Our first email of the day is from, oh, what a shock, we got an email from Gene Hendricks, who would have thought?
He's our only listener.
I think he is our only listener.
Doesn't matter, Gene listens to everything, and we appreciate every time that he listens to our show.
Absolutely. In fact, he can listen to us multiple times just to get us more downloads.
Yeah, go to different computers at your work and download it from there. That helps.
So Gene's email is titled, I Liked Him Better When He Spoke Backwards. And it is addressed to Andy, Sean, and Paul. Question for you. How do you redo where no one has gone before when you can only boldly stay? Simple. You whip up some wish-granting aliens. There are only 2 redeeming things that I got out of this episode. First, you get an idea of what the characters are really like. How Bashir sees Dax. How Kira is always going to the worst possible scenario. How Dax goes to the oddest scientific explanation, etc. Second, eventually people of my body type will be able to be a record breaker in a professional... In professional sports.
Okay.
That reference, I didn't get that till the very end.
Poor Buck Buckeye. You know.
maybe I'm getting old, but for some reason, a stupid, submissive Dax is nowhere near as attractive as the real thing. I don't remember how I felt when I saw this episode in the original run, but I can pretty much guarantee that the teenage me had the opposite opinion.
Well, duh. Sorry, Durhey. Yeah, a submissive Dax, willing to do anything that you want her to do at age, 18? Oh, yes, please, and twice on Sundays.
No, please, no. P.S., in case you didn't get my reference in the subject, as Andy said, the actor that played Rumpelstiltskin was the dwarf in the Red Room in Twin Peaks. It's been a few weeks, so I wanted to put a reminder in.
Yeah, well, sadly, it's been a few weeks since we actually recorded that episode. So, yeah, unfortunately, as we're recording this, Gene probably won't hear this until, mid-November or something. I don't know. But thank you, Gene, for writing in. Do you want to get the next email, Andy? Do you have it open?
I will get the next email, yes. Our next email is from Timothy Elliott, paging Dr. Morbius. Ah, he's referencing Forbidden Planet.
Nice.
Greetings, Paul, Andy, and Sean, and your special mystery guest. It's Dr. Bill again. I kid, I think Bill is the Ed McMahon to Paul's Johnny Carson. I don't get that. I really enjoyed your coverage of If Wishes Were Horses, a lackluster episode at the most. It felt like an issue of Marvel's Star Trek towards the end of its run. Some might say that Chief O'Brien was an Imagineer during this episode. Others might speculate that during time the aliens were testing human imagination, that some of the crew of DS9 might be asleep. If these same slumbering folks had access to the aliens' powers, might their subconscious IDs be unleashed whilst they slept? Might there have been dozens of invisible id monsters rampaging through the station, killing any and all in their way? The promenade would have run red and green and blue and pink, etc. Would you have felt better, Sean, if Dr. Bashir had his body plastered all over the room?
Oh, yes.
I know the idea is absurd or too dark for TV, but it's the first thing that occurred to me whilst watching the show. The episode does feel like that overused trope of the holodeck gone awry. I would give this episode 2 bars of gold pressed platinum. It's no worse than some of the Next Generation Season 1 shows, and I know that DS9 will become so much better, so I try not to be too harsh. May your lobes grow like the mighty oak. Cheers, Tim Elliott, Texas. I look forward to meeting you, Paul, and Bill in June at EternalCon. That Tim looks forward to that. I won't meet.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, finances have denied me from getting up to EternalCon. I really wish I could, but yeah, I can just say that the federal government has limited me from making any large purchases from now on. Yeah. Go screw yourself, IRS.
Well, I'm also looking forward to meeting with Tim. So I'm glad, this is becoming quite the event because, it's a little Long Island Con, but we got people like Tim who are coming all the way from Texas, which is, I assume that's more the lore of Two True Freaks than it is the lore of Eternal Con. I certainly hope so, because otherwise you might end up being disappointed because it's not a huge con. But it should be a lot of fun. I'm really, really looking forward to it. I think this is going to be quite the event.
Yeah, I'm certain there'll be shows, because I know when they did Celebration, they had shows all about it. I can't wait to hear what you guys are doing, and you guys have got to get together and do some sort of trivia night or something like that. That'll be a heck of a lot of fun. Just record that, and just record your general BSing all over the place. That makes for entertaining shows.
Yeah, well, that's the plan. We, I don't have a good mobile recorder, but Bill has one, and Scott has a pretty good one. So between the two of them, I assume we'll be able to get most of our postable things on the recorder and end up posting them. And hopefully it will end up being entertaining for people. I do find personally that I enjoy the road shows a lot. So I'm hoping other people will as well.
Well, in a live Back to the Bins, that'd be just a heck of a lot of fun. Even if you include some other people in the show, that'll be great. That'd be more than worth listening to. But thanks everyone for writing in, or do we have anything else to say? Sorry, Paul, interrupted you there.
I could tell you, when I watched this one, I was in the middle of doing something, so I let it go on to the next episode, and I'm really looking forward to talking about that one with you guys.
Okay, so let's just say the email address, once again, is listentotheprophets@gmail.com. If you'd like to write in, like Tim or Gene, or Doris Liang, who has a project for us that we're going to go check out, we'd love to read your email on the next show. But for now, let's go ahead and see what's coming up next time, Andy.
Next time on an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets, we're at home with the Cardassians. Hopefully no one will show us their ass.
Do you think that the Cardassians' ass has like a spoon on it, like their foreheads?
And Bajoran's asses have ridges on?
I don't want to think about that.
All I can say is, if you're listening to this and you're getting ready and you're thinking, well, should I watch that episode? I don't know. I have one word for you. Garrick.
Plain, simple Garrick. And Thingio's in it as well, isn't it? And Dukat back as well.
Dukat's back. Yeah. Excellent. It wouldn't be a Cardassian show if you didn't have Garrick and Dukat. I'm looking forward to this. So, yeah, we'll go from what was kind of a mediocre episode to hopefully a really good one. And we'll see you next time, everyone.
Take it easy.
Goodbye.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
After that, for me, the demarcation point's the new 52.
Yeah, exactly.
Post new 52. Right. Yeah, post new 52. I can. Well, you'll hear this next week when we do Superman Ulysses, if you listen to it. I don't know if you do, but if you do, you'll hear me and Michael have an epic rant. I mean, who knew we had this much built-up aggression, emotion, whatever, about how DC have handled Superman since new 52 started.
I wouldn't have thought we did. But the inconsistency of it, letting Batman and Green Lantern kind of go on because their sales were good, and then just the wholesale changes to Superman that I don't know anybody who really likes. The initial Grant Morrison Action Comics started out
But that divides Grant Morrison fans. Michael being a prime example, he doesn't think much of it. He thinks Morrison said everything he needed to say about Superman in All-Star Superman, which he thinks is a masterpiece. And I actually don't disagree with him. I don't particularly like Frank Quitely's art, but I do think All-Star Superman is the closest they've got to doing a proper Superman story in 15 years.
I'm a little less enamored of it.
You're a little less kind. That's fair enough. But he's very down the middle about his new 52 Superman. So if you're even dividing Grant Morrison fans, you're not doing something right. Yeah, well, especially at the prices. I mean, we do a comparison how much Scott Pilgrim costs versus how much this Superman Ulysses story cost. And people, I'm waiting for the flood of email from people saying you can't compare manga to DC Comics. I can compare how much something costs versus how much satisfaction it gives me. And that entire Superman Ulysses art costs $34. Now the trade or the hardcover is on Amazon for only $18. So that's probably better value for money. But Scott Pilgrim, you got 200 pages in each volume for only, say, call it $10. And which gave me more enjoyment.
And not to be a dick, but it's my show. I can compare anything I want.
Yeah, pretty much.
Tell me I can't compare. I'm comparing. I'm going to compare the size of your head to this Superman book.
Let's move on to something fun, which is Deep Space Nine. I'm ready to talk about these shows.
I have the first one, right?
Actually, I've got the first one.
Oh, man.
Did you already...
You went to all the effort to write a synopsis.
To all the effort of looking up the synopsis.
And cutting and pasting it from Wikipedia into a Word document. Damn you.
All right, well, I'll have to do... Since I have the next one, since I was mistaken, I'll have to actually click on a hyperlink in order to get to it.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, my index finger's going to be tired.
Yeah.
Yeah, because last time it was you two guys, so this time it's me and Paul.
Okay, no problem. Okay. Like I said, all I gotta do is click the next episode link.
You've got invasive procedures.
Yeah. I like the first one better. I wanted to do that one.
Sorry. You know, it's luck of the draw. We all get shitty ones from time to time.
Have you edited them yet?
Yeah, they're edited. They're ready to go.
All right, and did anything leap out at you?
I can't even remember what I edited, you know. I can't even remember my show that I edited, you know, this Friday.
So. We're absolutely shocking, aren't we?
You know, I have to go back to my notes and re-listen to them before I post, because otherwise I'm like, who was on this episode? Who was this? All was Paul on there? Was Gene on there? Was Dr. Bill on there? You know, I
oh, whoa. Why am I getting bumped in with the guest stars?
Oh, yeah, you show up every week, don't you?
We're working on
was
something.
Was Paul on there? Yes, Paul was on there.
It's early, forgive me. Or not.